Generous support for Coastal Windage comes from Cameron's Restaurant Pub and Inn, and now RV Park. Cameron's is the only true British pub on the coastside, featuring 19 beers on tap and more than 60 brands of bottles. Come for the food and stay for the fun. Happy hour specials Monday through Friday. Open mic night on Thursday and karaoke on Friday and Saturday. Cameron's Restaurant Pub in Half Moon Bay.
Broadcasting live from the KHMB studios in downtown Half Moon Bay. This is Coastal Windage, the talk of the coast. The Coastside's own live call-in talk radio show. From Pescadero to Pacifica and beyond, this is the place for Coastside issues, hot topics, and you. And now, the host of Coastal Windage, Mr. Ruben Truthmaker, and his co-host, Crystalyn.
All right, Coastsiders, we're already into the second show of the year, and we have a packed show, so let's get right into it. Crystalyn, good morning.
Good morning.
Yes, thank you. Needed that. Always need that on a Friday. Thank you. It's Friday, January 9th, 2026, in studio with us right now, and for the entire 59 and a half minutes that we have left, Greg Diegues, former chair and council person for the Midcoast Community Council, current director of sustainability for Shift Bay Area. We're going to get into all that, but real quick, Greg, in a sentence, Shift Bay Area, what are we talking about here?
It stands for sustainability in housing, infrastructure, finance, and transportation.
Oh, just, you know.
Okay.
Just the easy stuff.
Yeah, right. Just the skim off the top, right? No. So, I mean, yeah, what are you doing with your time? You know, come on.
Would you like some of this champagne?
Yes. Thank you. Yes, mimosas all around. All right. Here's our topics. Let's just get right into it. We're here every Friday morning, 9 to 10, literally every Friday morning. On KHMB, your local radio station, 100.9 FM, rocking 1710 AM, streaming live on KHMBradio.com. There's really no reason for you not to be able to access this. Coastside issues, hot topics, you, me, Crystalyn, our guests, you. Oh, I already said you. Yeah, well, that's you. See how important you listeners are? Okay, here's today's topics. Is there a crummier road in the county than Obispo Road in El Granada? I mean, have you driven that road?
Yeah.
Yes. In your amazing Bronco, you can get through it. Anybody else in a regular car, you're getting a realignment every time you drive down that road. All right, it's terrible. Other topic, Congressman Sam Liccardo, friend of the show, secures over $1 million for the coast side for some of the very things that Greg is going to talk about later today. And, oh, later on the show, Shooting the Breeze live interview with Greg Diegues, who we just introduced as the former MCC chair and, like I said, current director of sustainability for Shift Bay Area. I had the interns, they got to do something. You can see they're looking at their phones right now, which is not allowed. No phone looking. But I asked them to look into it because I thought, man, Greg has been on the show a lot of times. Looks like only twice, this being your third time. That's hard to believe. You're on September 27th, 2024, and then you were on May 19th, 2023 with Michelle Dragony. I mean, anybody that's interested in Coastside should go look up that show on KHMB in the podcast and get a primer with two people that know everything there is to know about what's going on the Coastside, especially at the, like, governmental level.
Yeah.
The real details, not the next door details, the real details. Okay. Weather. Air quality report, this is the only place you can get it, in live real time. No other radio station, no other radio show in the history of humanity has ever done this, except this one, and we do it every Friday. So you're welcome. And Greg, air quality, of all the things, here on the coast side at least, something we don't really have to worry about.
For now.
Thank you. All right.
Well, no.
Way to bring that cloud in. That's my job.
We're not allowed to have anything nice.
That is my job. Okay. Let's remember our scale, 0 to 50 is incredible, 51 to 100 is moderate. We don't even worry about that because, like I said, for now, we're golden. And listen to how golden this is. This is our usual. We'll start with the terrible. Today in Santa Cruz, it's just an awful, just hardly bearable 16, right? Let's remember 0 to 50 is incredible. So it's at 16. Then we go to Redwood City at 2.
Ooh.
El Granada, 1.
Ooh.
Half Moon Bay, 0.
What?
People, go outdoors and take a breath. It doesn't get any better than that.
It is very blue out there.
And our Easter egg location, let's see if anybody, listeners, can figure it out. Cambridge, Massachusetts, 52 today in Cambridge. Must be burning some fires.
Been there.
And if somebody wants to call in and guess why,
yes,
650-560-9851.
There you go. And get some windage bucks. Still giving away the windage bucks. Over
$100
worth, over $100 worth of discounts at 13 local businesses. If you can figure out why Cambridge, Massachusetts is the Easter egg location for our air quality report. Okay. Chrisalyn, yeah. I saw on your Coastside 411 website, which is for the Chamber of Commerce, is that?
Yeah, I mean, yes, it's the Chamber website, but it's for the community. It's...
Okay. That there's an introduction to acrylic painting class that's being offered now in El Granada. This is being offered by instructor Claudia Marshall through Granada Community Services District. One of the many benefits the community has received since the district's conversion to a community service district from a straight sewer district back in 2013.
Yeah, shout out to Hope and her team. They really do a lot of good programming.
Yeah, there's still some people grumbling, which I don't understand what the issue is, grumbling about this over a decade later about how dare GSD convert to a community services district and offer any kind of recreational services or anything like that, because we have so much of that being offered to us on the Midcoast elsewise. I just made up a new word there, by the way, elsewise. Yes,
okay.
You're free to use that.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay, these classes go from 1 to 3:30 p.m. on Wednesdays, ranging from going from January 14th through February 11th. You can go to the GCSD website to sign up. Greg or Chrisalyn, either of you paint or dabble in other artistic pursuits like needlepoint or Zentangle or sculpture or building of giant wooden trolls?
I'm a crafter, but I'm one of those that, like, sees something, thinks it's cool, spends 2 weeks being super obsessed with it, and then I never do it again.
So you have a bunch of materials in your
yes.
garage that, like...
I have a whole loft filled with crafting supplies, all the way from, like, pouring acrylic over dried flowers to painting to, yeah, I have many, many whims.
Anything that you specialize in that, like, you're really, really good at it?
Graphic design.
Oh, nice.
That was what my college degree was in. That and my college degree was 3D animation and graphic design. I wanted to work for Pixar, but that was my big creative. No, my college did not prepare for what a Pixar life would have been.
Yeah,
I got halfway into a stained glass panel built after my sailboat. That was 10 years ago.
Halfway into it and then lost interest or got distracted.
Still got all the stuff in the room down there.
I would love to do this acrylic painting class. Sounds great. But I'm not able to for the following three reasons. The classes are on Wednesday afternoons, and I'm already committed at that time on those days. I was surprised. I thought it would be in the evening when I saw the time. The classes are 2.5 hours long each, and my attention span can't handle that. There's a reason this show is only 1 hour, right? If we got into a second hour, it would get a little weird. And then, unfortunately, listed on the description was a prerequisite intermediate drawing skill required.
Oh, no.
Yep, I'm out. I cannot even doodle, okay? But can barely write. I don't know if you have experienced this, you being folks that are at least, I mean, Greg, maybe Greg's as old as me. Chrisalyn, you're at least within visibility of me there. It's getting hard to write because I write so infrequently
yes.
that I go to write and I'm literally writing the wrong letters. You know?
My handwriting used to be pretty solid, and now I can write for 3 seconds, and then it turns into that doctor level handwriting
yes.
because I'm so used to typing everything.
Oh, well, I mean, I'm kind of stuck in between because my typing is still horrific after all these years because I've got this bricklayer hands. And then my printing, yes, used to be amazing. So what I've started to do, because I read some article about this somewhere, I've started to write in cursive now, just to like challenge myself to like slow down, figure out where, because I read that like the thing about cursive specifically is because there's all these flowing things that you have to connect to the next letter. It really is making your brain operate on different levels to like, what am I thinking? What am I doing with my hand? How am I connecting it to thinking ahead to the next letter where that twirly winds up?
Sorry, this reminds me. I was talking to shopkeeper Amber from Paper Crane, and she said this year she sold so many paper day planners. Like, people are trying to get away. I just thought you would appreciate that. Away from their, you know, device, the calendar being on their phone, and so, and that'll also help with the handwriting. And like, people are really getting into like writing notes and the different colors and this and that. But wow, there's like a resurgence of like trying to get less digital.
I love it. It has no chance of succeeding, but I love it. We're already completely compromised by the cult of technology. So just, but I begin, just like in 1984, there will be pockets of resistance. Mm-hmm. You know, you'll squirrel away your little notebook in the little corner of the room that the Nest Cam can't see. And every once in a while, you'll sneak over there, write a couple of notes in your cursive.
There's one big advantage. The power supply on those pencils is awesome.
That's what I'm saying. PG&E, don't need you.
It's all about the graphite.
Nice. Okay. Folks, meaning you two and the interns, I guess. All right. And the marketing director and the advertising. What is it? Vice president? Okay. Vice president. We have a vice president of advertising on KHMB. That's ridiculous. Anyways, all the people in the room and the people in the elevated viewing gallery. Did you know there's a 175-foot, three-tier waterfall in Pacifica that's flowing right now? Probably not, because like Denali, you need some cooperation from the elements. One being that it's an ephemeral waterfall, and it's thin and wispy, and it's tucked into a crevice on the north side of Montero Mountain in San Pedro County Park. So really, you have to see it after a heavy downpour, and then it's Pacifica, so it's often foggy there on the north side of Montero Mountain. So it's kind of like Mount Denali in Alaska. It's a real treat if the
heavens part
and you can see it, but it's flowing right now. Go out Old Trout Farm Loop Trail, say that fast three times, to Brooks Creek Trail. Right, I got Old Trout Farm Loop Trail fine, and it's the Brooks Creek Trail that tripped me up. And go to Brooks Fall Lookout Point, where you can see this amazing waterfall. Mike Kahn of Pacific has created some guides for exploring the local outdoors under his brand Explore Local Nature. His latest guide, which features Brooks Falls, which I've lived here 25 years. No, I never heard of that. Have you ever heard of that, Greg?
No.
Crystalline?
Nope.
Yep. Anybody else? Oh,
no.
Right. You've heard of it? No. I'm calling no on that person. No. Anyways, his latest guide, which features Brooks Falls, is called Winter Wonderland Guide. Has a bunch of different things. The Secret 7 list, a curated selection of trails through county parks, mid-pen preserves, and state parks, waterfalls and wild creeks, a hike for every mood, and the Insider Edge. So go to guides.explorelocalnature.com and check out Mike Kahn's cool guides. I'm really glad that he made a post on Nextdoor about this. Yeah, I'm going to check out those guides, and one of these days I'm going to get around to checking out Brooks Falls.
Sweet.
San Pedro County Park is pretty cool. It's pretty cool. All right, I'm going to skip that topic because we got Greg in here. Okay, here we go. Is there a crummier road in the county than Obispo Road in El Granada? This is the frontage road to Highway 1 that connects Coronado Avenue, which is, if you're going north, and you've entered the Midcoast. It's the first stoplight when you've entered the Midcoast. That Frenchman's Creek is not in the Midcoast. That is in the city of Half Moon Bay. So it's the first stoplight when you enter the Midcoast. That's Coronado Road. Obispo connects Coronado Road with Avenue Alhambra. All right, well, let's, you know, because I'm always trying to find the good and the positive in things, let's start with the good things about Obispo Road. Well, New Star Fire Station 41 is located there, and I already hear people going, wait, that's not a good thing. Is that a good thing? Well, we got the lights problem. We've got the could you pick a worse place to put a fire station where you're going to have huge trucks coming in and out? That is the clog on the mid-coast right there, as it was this morning when I was trying to get out.
But isn't it also pretty isn't it a clog because it's so centrally located? Like, isn't that a great place for a fire station?
But when you look at some of the other locations they had a chance to go to?
That I don't know.
Yeah, and the other thing is the 85% of their calls are for medical, not for fire. Mm-hmm. We'll get into that in a minute, a couple minutes, Greg. 85% of their calls are for medical. So, you know, do they need those? I know they roll those huge pumper trucks out, but do they need a huge pumper truck for a medical call, or could they roll the ambulance out or a smaller vehicle? Remember in Emergency, that show, Emergency 50, no? Nobody?
What? Really? There's like a 1,000 ER shows. Pick one.
Okay, Frank the Engineer knows one. So in the 70s.
I wasn't even born. A pickup truck.
Yeah, they had like the big pumper trucks, but then they had a smaller like pickup truck that would, you know, kind of attend to the pumper trucks. Anyways, so the new fire station is there, and I will admit they made this little like Zen park right on the corner, which I was like, meh, until I've now walked it a few times with my dog. And there is something to, you know, these Zen mazes where you go around in a circle and you're just supposed to kind of like think about stuff. And so I've walked that. It's a kind of a back and forth little path. It's not bad. I always think about when I see that, like, there used to be that maze in the quarry park. That scene in Midnight Express where he gets sent to like the crazy asylum, so Midnight Express, he goes to a Turkish prison. The guy's trying to smuggle drugs out of Turkey and gets caught, goes to a Turkish prison, spends a while there, tries to escape, gets sent to like the crazy part of this Turkish prison, and it's just in the basement of this building. It's just a mass of these decrepit prisoners walking around in a circle, just endlessly walking around. It's like 100 of them walking around a circle, mumbling to themselves and stuff. That's what I think about every time when I see one of these mazes.
Your brain is a dark, dark place.
It is. I mean, Midnight Express, but that's a great movie and a great book. So, yes, what's the word, Schadenfreude there? Like, okay, yeah, it's not... Yeah, it's not me in there, but, man, it's an incredible story. Okay, Obispo Road has a beautiful view of Surfers Beach. There's convenient parking at the corner with Coronado for surfers and beachgoers. Okay.
Have you seen the Caltrans concept plans?
For Obispo?
For Highway 1?
Mm-hmm. Well,
they're going to potentially put causeways and stuff there. Obispo Road is going to be changing a lot.
Yeah, well, this is a question about... Caltrans, yeah, I've seen some plans or some suggestions. But when is this going to happen? Because I want to ask GCSD, and I keep meaning to ask them, what coordination is going on here? They're making this, they've got plans for this great park right there. But if Highway 1 is going to be realigned, this is going to change all of these plans. Caltrans, how about stepping up and getting, you know, involved in this? These GCSD plans have been going on for years.
Caltrans is going to be holding public comment, I think, starting March of next year on the document. I can send you a copy of it. I guarantee it's happening. Supervisor Mueller's been involved heavily.
With GCSD?
With everybody. The Harbor District, that is a nexus, that stretch of road on the highway, which is going to affect Obispo, is a nexus of a huge amount of beneficial activity. GCSD wanting to broaden the rec opportunities, Caltrans wanting to put two bike lanes on Highway 1 and choke off all hope of evacuation. There's a lot going on there, the erosion. And then there's actually a good idea that there's no space for. There's Deer Creek, which is dumping sand and silt into the harbor, which they have to pay money to dredge out. Meanwhile, we're eroding Surfers Beach, so Pruitt and others at the Harbor District, I think Dormorant was behind that, proposed rerouting Deer Creek further south through the Burnham Strip or adjacent to it and exiting at Surfers Beach so that the sand would then go where it's needed.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
A lot of good ideas for parking, and they all want the same land.
Yeah, right. This narrow strip of land that we call the Burnham Strip. Well, just to finish up on Obispo, it's extremely dangerous, not only for drivers, but cyclists and pedestrians. The roadway itself is in horrible condition. Potholes in the middle, the edges of the road. One, if you're going northbound, just goes into like a drainage ditch with no shoulder that if you're not careful, and you're trying to avoid these huge potholes in the middle, and cars coming at you from the other direction that are driving in the middle of the road because the shoulders are full with RVs and people parking and also huge potholes. And so it's just a slalom course where you're trying to avoid these potholes and cars coming the other direction that are trying to avoid potholes and people walking because there's no sidewalk, there's no shoulder, there's no street lights, poor lane striping, huge potholes that when it rains, because there's no street lights, when it rains and it's dark, it looks like there's a flat road, and then you're driving along, and suddenly your front wheel is up to the fender.
There's extra light at the fire station.
Mm-hmm. There's also 50 feet of sidewalk right in front of the fire station that goes from nowhere to nowhere and just ends because, you know, they need a sidewalk in front of the fire station where there's no doorway or anything there for some reason, but then it doesn't extend, and there's a little creek drainage, so not the road narrows at a point where the creek crosses underneath the road, so it's hard to even walk through there. It's just a completely dangerous, terrible road that somehow has not been ever repaved that I can remember in the 25 years I've lived here. But this whole thing about Obispo started because I drive it every day. You come past the old fire station going north.
How come just not take the road above it?
Alhambra?
Yeah.
Because I live over on North El Granada, and so it's a nice cutoff.
Okay.
You got to go up, and then you got to come down to a stop sign, and so it saves a little bit of time. But as you come past the old fire station, the road curves and goes up back to Avenue Alhambra. And for the last several weeks, a couple of RVs have been parked right at this curve. They couldn't park 50 feet further up or 50 feet back at the straight sections. They're right at this curve, blocking visibility for both directions and forcing cars going northbound to swing out because the back end of the RV is, if you think about the, like, Greg, help me out here with the math terms. The, like, you know, the angle and the of the dangle, as my dad would say.
Can I suggest your leverage point is the fire district? Because that's a public health and safety asset. And if they find their access and egress is being impeded, they should, A, help get the road fixed by lobbying with DPW, and B, enforce the RV parking regulations, because that could be blocking their ability to turn.
Well, Greg, I would ask, I would say, like, I have no confidence that the Coastside Fire Protection District would have any interest in doing that. They had a chance when they built the fire station. With all the money that CPFD has, why couldn't they just be benevolent and help fix the road a little bit at all? At all. They took care of themselves. But they didn't. So I don't feel like that's the agency that would deal with this. This is County Public Works.
Right, but I'm saying the CFPD should be able to lobby with DPW to get that done.
They should, but okay. Here we go. Getting into Greg's topics now. Congressman Sam Liccardo secures over $1 million in federal funding for the Coastside. Sadly, Coastal Windage is breaking this story, as I had the interns check Coastside News last night. Nothing about this. Over $1 million, I mean, which I know in today's world is, you know, sounds better than it probably go. Sounds like it would go farther than it will, but it's something and it needs to be talked about. So I'm bummed that this wasn't in our air quotes paper, but it is what it is. So we're breaking the story. Sam Liccardo secured over $1 million. Yesterday, House of Representatives passed a bipartisan?
Yep.
Yeah, there's a lot of hot air in Congress. So.
And it smells.
Yep. So they did. That's an accurate... I meant to say that. A bipartisan funding bill. Hold on. How many minutes? Five? Oh, we got plenty of time. Funding bill including more than $3.2 million in community project funding, known as CPF. That Congressman Sam Liccardo secured to strengthen coastal resilience, grow the innovation workforce, and enhance public safety across California's 16th congressional district. Okay, over 1 million of that 3.2 is coming to the coastside. In his first term, Sam Liccardo has established two primary areas of priority for his district office team, one of which, of those two primary areas, focuses on coastside communities. As Greg knows, whose roads, communications, power, sewer, and water lines and other infrastructure has suffered from age, worsening storms, and coastal sea level rise, in addition to a lack of attention from the powers that be. Thank you, Sam Liccardo, for paying some attention. Okay, the community project funds coming to the coastside will support two critical projects in the Montara Moss Beach area and Half Moon Bay. Over $1 million itself for the Montara Water and Sanitary District Seal Cove Coastal Resilience Project. This project will replace and relocate potable water and sewer pressure pipelines in the Seal Cove area along the bluffs of Fitzgerald Marine Preserve, where seismic activity is damaging existing infrastructure. If you go out to Pillar Point Bluffs and you continue north and you go come out on Ocean Road, I believe that's the name of that road there.
That's the one that's been shut down.
Yes. That you can drive on a little portion of it now, but the section that connects you to this Moss Beach Distillery is now like just a Wild West jumble of seismic lifting and sliding. And it's pretty interesting. I ride my bike through there, walk my dog through there. It's interesting to walk through. But that is what's happening out there, is that whole bluff side is sliding away. And there's a couple of houses have already, if you on the ocean side of Ocean Road, you can see some foundations of houses that are no longer there. But on the mountain side of Ocean Road, there's still houses that are, moving in that direction, and their pipes and their infrastructure are all being affected by that.
There's a new geologic report the county finally released recently, last month or so. A report was done last year. I don't know if you want to talk about that.
Yeah. I mean, well, Mike, question for you, Greg. $1 million, that's great. Is that going to solve this problem?
The problem is perpetual, so no, not going to solve the problem. And we face the Samaritan's Dilemma, or what is that what it's called? Samaritan's Dilemma, where by doing good works and helping people out, you end up fostering risky behavior that ends up costing more money. Mm-hmm. And the same thing exists in Pacifica, where they're trying to build a seawall for $120 million to save 20 homes now and 100 by the end of the century. And every 40 years, the infrastructure cost quadruples as you have to replenish it. So you're digging yourself a deeper hole. So it won't solve the Seal Cove problem, I feel, for those folks. I don't know who didn't disclose what, given that there were 1970 and 1980 reports on this, and the county continued to permit the stuff. And then, of course, there's the issue of what happened with the water district. I can understand how we don't want the ratepayers in Montara to have to pay an infinite cost to keep rebuilding and rebuilding and rebuilding Seal Cove connections. But, you know, they're entitled to some kind of service as long as they're permitted to live there. So there's a big issue there.
I mean, per what you're saying about fostering risky behavior, this reminds me, I think it's even the same road, Ocean Road in Miramar. Ocean Road in Miramar. That the county continue where the Miramar Beach restaurant is, that the county continues to pay money and hoarsely said a couple times, this is the last time we're putting money into this road to bolster it up, and it just keeps we just keep pouring money into that road. All right, we're going to go to a commercial break. When we come back, we're going to continue to talk about what's happening with Seal Cove, the money that Sam Liccardo got, and then we'll get into some even more meatier topics that Greg wants to talk
this
about.
Right after community this. Radio for the Coastside. 100.9 Coastal Windage is brought to you by Cameron's Restaurant and Pub in Half Moon Bay. Come for the food, stay for the fun. That's Cameron's Restaurant and Pub on Highway 1 in Half Moon Bay.
Hi, this is Jay Michaels. Make sure to join me along with Stan Moore and Luttrell after Coastal Windage. We'll get a look at today in history and a brand new forgotten find. Coming up at 10 a.m. from 100.9 FM KHMB.
I mean, okay, so we're back. We've got Greg Diegas with us, Director of Sustainability for Shift Bay Area, former chair of the MCC, so someone who knows a lot about what's going on, along with Crystalline, also someone who knows a lot about what's going on, and me, Ruben, and I'm just here to facilitate the discussion. I don't really know what's going on. But coming back to Seal Cove, Greg, so $1 million is not going to fix it. Is there any amount of money to fix this problem?
It's an infinite cost if you keep it up. It's a perpetual commitment to service, so it's an infinite cost. And that's a big problem because it's a very small district. And the number I heard, I don't know if it's in writing, was $3 million to make some immediate fixes. But it'll be more over time. If you read the geologic report, it says it could take hundreds of thousands of years before that thing slips away. But any given earthquake could trigger much more rapid. I have a quote somewhere I could dig up for you. It's a real perpetual problem, just as it is in Pacifica, as it is on the Miramar Bluffs, as it is in Florida. Are we going to continue to pay to rebuild Florida after every hurricane? Who's going to pay? You know, what makes sense? You know, and that's what I talk about, the Samaritan's Dilemma, where you get this moral hazard.
And construction costs always, you know, stay exactly how you
or go down.
Put on the budget. No project ever, you know, doubles as it goes.
Well, so easy, just a lob of softball up for you there, Greg. So what is the, what's the future look like on Seal Cove? What's going to happen over the next 5 to 20 years? I mean,
well, put me on a spot here.
Yeah,
to,
I don't know,
predict
what?
Earthquake, landslide, and social, you know.
Well, I guess, I mean, we can't obviously, I mean, get AI on it. They can predict this earthquake situation, right? But is somebody going to sue somebody about this? I mean,
well, I have no particular knowledge, but, you know, it wouldn't be surprising for there to be lawsuits, but that's not going to solve the problem. Somebody suggested, and I think this with respect to Sharp Park Road, I heard this years ago, we let somebody like the county acquire the properties and use them as Airbnbs, charging those outrageous rates so that somebody can earn an economic payback for warehousing and keeping those properties for as long as they'll last, but then letting them go. You know, that's not my call, but there needs to be a solution that doesn't dig us a perpetual hole when we have healthcare, school funding, you know, roads like Obispo, wildfire, and many other social priorities. It just doesn't make sense to me to continue to put society's money into that. Horsley was suggesting a special district. I don't know if you're aware of that. Mm. Before Don passed, he had mentioned that both in context of the Murata Surf area and Seal Cove. I don't know what was done or wasn't done, but the time to do that, of course, is before you permit the construction, which the county didn't do.
And continue to build houses. Houses continue to be built in Seal Cove. Okay, moving on to the next thing that Congressman Liccardo got some money for. And this, unfortunately, is much less money. And I mean, it sounds like a lot, again, but when you're talking about infrastructure or anything, I mean, $1 million for the Seal Cove, is that for the permitting and the plans? I mean, like, you know, the study to, like, that. Okay, so Congressman Liccardo got $50,000 for One Shoreline's Half Moon Bay Resilience Project. This investment will fund infrastructure upgrades to the wastewater treatment plant, the SAM plant in Half Moon Bay, to prevent flooding and coastal erosion in San Mateo County. Is this going to fix the SAM problems?
SAM is an interesting case because they did think ahead, specifically in Montero Water and Sanitary District thought ahead. Back when we did the local resiliency plan, I think about 3-4 years ago, I went to every agency. I was on the council at the time, and I said, what are we going to do to register our coastal risks for this five-year plan? And Montero stepped up because they're part owner of the SAM facility, and they filed the appropriate paperwork. Other districts don't seem to have wanted to, and I know one board member had said in another district, you know, it's just a waste of time. We spend the consultant money, and we'll never get anything. Well, this time, MWSD spent the money, and they've gotten millions or more back to help pay for under FEMA some of the damage, and they have raised the berm around it. They're going to rebuild the location of the electrical building. They're going to do a job that will last a while, a long enough while that, you know, it makes some sense. So it's not going to solve the sand problem, because there's always the possibility of a major extra storm. But I think they've toughened things up in a responsible way. So does that answer your question?
Yeah, that's great news. That's great to hear. I mean, you know, this feels like one of these ticking time bombs that you don't, especially since, okay, let's see a show of hands. Everybody in the room, does anybody even know where the sand plant is? Exactly, like two people. Not counting you two. Okay, so because it's out of sight, out of mind, it's kind of like, well, what's the problem here? And the pipes are underground, you know, like, but it's a ticking time bomb that you hear about every once in a while. So that's great to hear that, Greg, that you, with your expertise and knowledge of the subject, that you feel like this is going to stabilize things for a while.
For a while, but it is on the list of the county hazards for sea level rise. Sea level rise is a gradual thing. It will occur. It's going to go on for probably 1,000 years because of the CO2 in the atmosphere. But they've taken some steps to secure it for now. And any asset you build is only going to last 40, 60 years, right? Mm-hmm. So you just have to plan when the next edition of SAM is going to be built, where it's going to be located.
Mm-hmm. Okay, which means the high school is ready for a complete tear down and rebuild, because that thing's been around for like 60 years. Okay. All right. Since we were talking about Sam, I had the interns dig up. There was an email somebody sent about Sam Licardo when he was on the show a while back. So since we were talking about Sam, we'll get this one email, and then we'll get to some more questions for Greg. This one's from Chakahula. I don't know. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right. Subject line, Sam Licardo. Good thinking, Chaka. How in the holy double hockey sticks did this show convince a U.S. congressman to come on the air? Does the Secret Service know about this? Does the Secret Service, do they provide protection for Congress people? I don't think so. It just boggles the mind. This show has, what, 12 listeners? Ouch. Chaka. Dude.
Well, Chaka's apparently one of them, so thank you.
Yeah, okay, there you go. You just outed yourself, Chaka.
13.
How does that help lift Licardo's visibility? What was he thinking? Okay.
Well, he's a very nice human being.
He is a nice guy.
Thank you.
He had lunch with a group of us at Half Moon Bay last year, and there were maybe a dozen or 15 people in. Yeah. Of course, his aides have to drag him out before he can finish his meal to the next thing.
I don't know how, like, Congress, Senate, Assembly people in other districts are, but my experience has been, like, above average. We have really nice human beings as our higher-end California electeds.
I mean, I will let that go. Okay. Sam Licardo, 100%. Ray Mueller, 100%. Here's my response to Chaka. What was he thinking? Here we go. Sam's a really smart guy, and he knows about the coastal windage reverse curse. So you've heard of the Sports Illustrated curse. You're on the cover, and then next week you blow out your knee and your career's over. It's the opposite. Greg, get ready, dude. You're gonna run for office. You're gonna be tapped for the governor's, you know, council on whatever, and just, you know, in like 2 minutes. Okay, so he knows about that. Two, as you were saying, he truly cares about the coast side and really likes his community, and other than having him on the show and having met him and talked to him a few times, I'm not any big contributor to his camp. I have contributed zero money ever to any political campaign ever or political person, so I'm not a big donor. Yes, a radio show and a massive media empire, but other than that, I mean, my influence is nothing. So his attention and being on this show is for about the community, and he really genuinely cares in general and about this community. Point three, he's a genuine person, at least in my experience. Not yet, Sam, hang in there, not yet corrupted by power, celebrity, and privilege that seems to go along with the federally elected officials. And lastly, yeah, coastal windage has some game, baby. So there you go. Okay, Greg, let's dig in. Okay, everybody got their bibs on? Get to get out your knife and fork. Here we go.
Spork.
Well, all right. Okay. And stand down. Stand down, everybody.
Caller.
Relax. Okay, here we go. We've got a caller, and we'll get right into you, caller. This is Ruben, Crystalline, Greg. Who we got on the phone right now?
Hey, all of you. It's Kevin Stachinski calling in.
Kevin S. Okay, Kevin, we've got Greg, former MCC member. Kevin, MCC adjacent now? Is that what I hear?
Yes. I resigned just this past week.
Is that what you're calling to tell us about?
Well, not necessarily. I wanted to go back to a couple of things, actually. I think you guys are talking about some really interesting and serious things that are impacting our community, Seal Cove being one of them. And I wanted to mention that during a presentation that I was at, we had a specialist who was talking about the kind of, as you know, Greg was mentioning, the never-ending problem that exists there underground geologically, and how almost anything that you throw at that issue, unfortunately for those who have homes there, is pretty much a pit, just this never-ending problem, and likely to only be a Band-Aid. So when you talk about $1 million or even $3 million, for something as major as that, considering you have underground movement that is in perpetual motion, it seems completely like a Band-Aid. But I do applaud anybody who goes after funds to try to, you know, even put a Band-Aid on to, you know, stretch out the time between now and when something horribly disastrous happens to one of our community members.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I mean, that's what Greg was saying. And I've seen Greg do some of these projections of other costs where he goes out like 50 years. And like the cost, just like you're like, oh, it's $1 million now. And in 50 years, it's, you know, X.
A number that has no name.
Yes, exactly. Like right. Just so add on 1 million zeros at the end of it.
Space bucks.
You know, it's not even real anymore.
3.5% inflation over 40 years quadruples the cost of an asset.
See, there you go. Yeah. Like, I didn't really understand what he said, but it sounded like some really serious quantitative stuff right there.
Well, that, and I also wanted to just applaud Greg for all of his, just, you know, boots on the ground and, you know, probably one of the most informed community members that I know. Somebody who worked with me prior to joining the MCC and kind of honing in on my focus. And I'm really pleased to announce that Coastside Allies and Manzanita Works has entered into an MOU, and we received our first allotment of funding for a grant program that we are going to be working on. And I think Greg and I talked and decided to sit down and talk about it in more detail later. But basically providing resources, financial resources and other resources for home hardening, focusing first on the emergency thoroughfares, and that will be for seniors, people living on fixed incomes, and those, you know, who are just marginalized, who just don't have the means to do the work to protect their homes. And so we're really excited about that, and something more formal will go out about that in the coming months.
Well, congratulations on that, Kevin, and maybe we need to get you in on the show so you can tell us about that in the next few months. How would that sound?
That's what I'm saying. You're always a ray of sunshine, Ruben.
Okay, Kevin, you went too far. People were listening. They were on the edge of their seat, and then they're like, wait a minute.
How much do you pay these people?
Yeah.
Did I hear Krista laugh with that one?
Yeah, she's laughing, too. Well, Kevin, I want to say, before we hang up here, I'm sorry to hear that you're not on the MCC anymore. However, your experience there and knowing that you have an intense interest in the community, Greg was also on the MCC and is now working for a nonprofit. I was affiliated with the MCC as well. And also found it unsatisfying and have gone out into the nonprofit world myself as well. And so I think you take that experience and you use it to inform your good works that you're doing out in the world through the nonprofit angle. And so while I'm, you know, I think it's a loss for the community, it's also a gain for the community. And Community Allies is going to be great. And I Coastside Allies. And I look forward to having you on the show to talk more about Coastside Allies.
Yeah, we are working on a nonprofit status, and I think that, you know, people who think that they need an organization to harness power and create change in the community are just mistaken. There's a lot of power in the voice of people, especially when it's framed correctly. And when you have people like Greg, who does a just a load of research prior to you know, making any formal requests, that's being key. And then also, you know, just treating our elected officials as if they're allies, and you know, working from that angle, we have seen a lot of success. So hats off to you, Greg, and enjoy the rest of the show.
Thanks, Kevin.
Thank you, Kevin.
Talk to you soon.
So can we transition into Wildfire by any chance?
Yes, sure. I was going to go to, okay, Ramba.
Red Alert Montero Moss Beach, a group that Larry DeYoung and a bunch of us started, is trying to address a wildfire hazard, a severe wildfire hazard in the cypress, or what do you call it? The
eucalyptus?
Yeah, it's the eucalyptus tree and the cypress.
Monterey.
What do they call it? All those invasive species. It's about 100 acres in this Caltrans bypass. It was called the Martini Creek Bypass years ago. And decades ago, when Caltrans got the property, it was just, you know, grass and scrub brush. And now it's a forest of invasive flammable species. Caltrans has let it go. They were going to put a highway there, but then this tunnel happened, okay? And so the homeowners in our area are very concerned that this is essentially a dagger or a spear thrust right into the heart of Montero Moss Beach. And if you watched Paradise or any of the other major fires where windborne embers caused the damage, it's the windborne fires that do it, it will next, those embers will fly a few miles, and Chief Sampson has testified to this in public, you know, and they could catch on to Quarry Park. And Quarry Park could catch on and then head toward Half Moon Bay. So we have had the support from Supervisor Mueller. We've talked to Berman. We've gotten emails and support from Becker, the senator. But Caltrans has done very little, and we really need, you know, some pressure put on them. So we recently got Coastside Fire Protection Bureau. Jim Sayer went to them, and they produced a letter supporting mitigation. And we're going back to Ray. We're going to try and get him to put a resolution on the Board of Supervisors agenda. But really, it's going to need Becker and Berman and more, you know, to force them to spend the money to fix this. The good news is it's Caltrans money. It's not county money, and the county's in dire shape. It's no particular city here. But getting them to agree to do it is the challenge. And so that's what RAM has been doing. We'll have a community meeting sometime probably later in January, early February, where we'll either talk about how we succeeded or be requesting, as Kevin's group is, mitigation of the wildfire. And that's where the Coastside Allies and we could be working together, because this wildfire thing, I mean, it's much more proximate than sea level rise. It needs to be fixed.
Okay, so I don't want to get Larry DeYoung mad at me, and we've had Larry on the show. I don't want to get Greg mad at me. I don't want to get Kevin mad at me. But I'm just, I'm not sold on this wildfire thing, okay? The people always cite Paradise. Probably the better analogy would be the SZU fire.
CZU
fire that was here on the coast side a few years ago. That's more relevant. Paradise is completely irrelevant. You know what they have in Paradise? You know what they have in Pacific Palisades?
Exit roads.
That they don't have, well, yes.
Evacuation.
That they don't have here, and which is why I never miss one second of sleep worrying about fire danger here on the coast. We don't have sustained 90 and 100 degree days for months or weeks at a time. Okay, the conditions on the ground in paradise are, we are never have those conditions here. And so, yes, a fire could happen. It's true, but are we saying that anywhere with forest, like, we need to cut down these trees because there's a fire danger? I mean, I just, what, okay, Greg, to
so
you.
I would beg to differ, but I would submit evidence in support of a counter viewpoint.
Yes.
The Oakland Hills fire is the most relevant, immediate.
Okay. But again, Oakland gets 100 degree temperatures. It gets hot over there, dry.
And you know what happens? The conditions include a mountain which accelerates the wind as it goes over the top, just like the Bernoulli effect on an airplane wing. It includes hot, dry fuel. So we need a drought year or two, and we need winds coming from the north northeast so that that wind comes over the mountain and drives the fire down into Half Moon Bay, and those happen every November. And I don't want to sick Keith Mangold on you, but we have written a bunch of articles about how in Novembers of drought years, the conditions you're talking about are present here. And don't forget, there was a wildfire here in Montara back close to the turn of the 20th century in 1906 or something and wiped out the town. So we're not making this stuff up. Climate change has made things hotter, drier, and the wind stronger. Sorry.
100 years ago when did we have a fire department? Was there a fire response? I mean, 100 years ago, I mean, okay, also... I mean, we don't have the conditions that the Oakland Hills has. We may have winds coming out of the north in November. And, yes, November is our summer, so we do have some days where it's actually hot. But those aren't sustained. And you may have a day or two that's hot, and then you're going to have 3 days in a row where it's just it's dripping wet when you wake up in the morning. The roads are wet. This is why I'm not concerned about fire danger on here on the coastside. This is a question I have for you, Greg, as a statistics data person. What is the data on this, or is this risk that we are worried about driven by insurance company, PUC, and CAL FIRE maps, or is there some actual data, and what even would that data be to show that there's wildfire danger here on the coastside? Here, right here on the coastside, not in Oakland, not right, in right. Paradise, here. What is the data?
Well, I don't have the paper in front of me, but what I would suggest is you get Keith Mangold on for a session, and we'll bring the papers with us. But as I said, we have proven that the winds do come from the north-northeast, and that when the soil is dry, those conditions have the fuel load we needed. And certainly the fire maps recognize this danger. Certainly the insurance companies recognize this danger, which is why my insurance bill's gone up fourfold.
But Greg, the insurance companies recognize this danger, but there is no historical precedent for that here on the coastside.
I just told you 100 years ago there was a...
How much money was paid out in insurance coverage on that?
100 years ago?
Yes.
The point...
$7.
Exactly my point.
The insurance companies have paid out $0
for fire recovery here on the coast. $0 they have ever paid out.
It's kind of irrelevant. The fact is the fire's been here. And with climate change, things are getting worse. It will happen again if we don't act to prevent it. The fact that they passed Zone Zero as a statewide regulation is a step in the right direction. The fact that people like Kevin are working on getting us the right equipment and materials to harden our homes. The fact that the state finally last September came out with a approved list of materials and suppliers. Those are all steps in the right direction. But we need the money for people to do it. The homes are the fuel. It's not the trees. The homes are the fuel.
Okay, thank you.
And there's a picture I have of Paradise, which I posted on Nextdoor, I think, last night, showing how the homes burned and the trees around survived.
Okay, thank you, Greg, because Melinda McNaughton and Jane Pradesilver, who we've had on the show, have made this exact point. We're out there cutting down all the trees, worrying about the trees. We got to thin out the trees. And what the Palisades fire showed us is that it's the houses.
The homes.
Yet we're falling all over ourselves to make exceptions for ADUs and builders exemptions and build.
Wait,
but we got to cut those trees down.
Are you saying the crux of the problem is people? people are the problem?
Too many people in the wildland-urban interface. That is the problem, and there's plenty of quotes about that.
But why are we not cutting the houses down instead of cutting the trees?
Why are we allowing ADUs to reduce defensible space around houses?
Yes.
You know, why
yes.
haven't we done something to increase evacuation capacity and why not increase the population out here?
Why did the county allow homes to be built on Seal Cove?
This is my beef with the fire thing, okay? Everybody is acknowledging it's the houses, the density, the materials of the houses, and yet here we are, like, the houses cost money, and they've got people in there that have money in those houses. Trees have nobody defending them.
Wait, hold on. Is there such thing
except
as
the
a...
Lorax.
Is there such thing as houses that are truly fire-resistant? I mean, I'm sure they're crazy expensive if they exist, but, like, is there house-building material?
So there is house-building material that will sort of survive, and there's a great photo after the Palisades fire of this house that was built by a guy who was aware of this, and he doesn't have porches and big windowsills. And in the driveway of the house next to him, just adjacent to the small concrete wall he built to prevent the fire from spreading, is a car, and the aluminum wheels melted because the temperature was 1,600 degrees. Mm. This guy's house and a tree survive.
What's his house made out of?
That's the point. That he's using the approved materials.
Okay. So...
So we just need to build smarter houses. So, like, every time somebody needs a remodel or wants to make the ADU, they need to start using the better materials.
And zone zero so that the fire can't run across the ground. Mm-hmm. And then we need to, like, when I'm rebuilding my decks, I'm now going to make sure that if embers land, they will not start a fire. The same thing with the soffits underneath the eaves.
Well, I guess my point is I feel like there's a group thing going on that we've, like, seized on this idea that this coastside, because of the CAL FIRE map that came out in like 2020 or so, somewhere around there, that showed basically every area on the coastside that wasn't a paved road is in red extreme fire danger. And I just refute that based on my experience growing up in Southern California, in fire danger country, living here for 25 years where I can't get 3 days of sun in a row. I'm not worried for 1 second about fire danger out here. We've got bigger problems, but I feel like this has become a topic du jour, and people are willing to cut down trees that we need that are part of what makes this area.
Could we make them redwoods and willows oaks instead of eucalyptus and Monterey pines?
I mean,
I'd go for that.
I've had this argument with...
I love Melinda and Jane. They've done good work.
They are great people, and I do support what they do. They're fighting an uphill battle against pesticides and herbicides and other developments.
Did you see that? The new testimony, they turned out one of the major foundational papers that said Roundup was safe has now been disproven. It was a bought piece of research.
What?
Shock.
Yes. Oh, my God.
Shock.
I'm shocked to hear that there's gambling going on in the casino. What? Oh, my goodness. Okay, well.
It's a fast hour.
I knew this would happen because, you know, as we've said many times, as Kevin said, you know, Greg is so knowledgeable about so many topics, and we've got all these topics here. But as I said to Greg before the show, each one of these topics could be an hour show by itself. So, Greg, I appreciate you coming in and knowing that we're only going to scratch the surface on a few of these topics, which we only have on a couple of them, Seal Cove, a little bit on Sam.
Fire
a little bit. But there's other topics the next time you come back that we want to talk about because we have 1 minute now. And that's we want to. So we're going to have to schedule you again, okay? I'm sorry, but you'll have to come back.
All right.
Shift Bay Area, we need to hear more about that because we didn't get to talk about Planned Bay Area 2050 Plus, which I think you have some thoughts on.
A trillion five, that's nothing.
Yeah, trillion. It's
dropping the bucket.
It's Monopoly money. And then, you know, your experience with the MCC, and I guess I'm a little concerned about the MCC right now. We had in the 2024 election, there were 3 open chairs. Nobody ran. Those were appointed. 2 of those 3 people are now no longer on the MCC. The MCC goes in these peaks and valleys where it's doing really good, and then it struggles, and it's doing really good. And I'm just I'm worried right now with two openings right now and three openings in the 2024 election and nobody ran.
Public service is important and vital. It's how we run the country, school boards, water boards, sewer boards, MCC, etc.
Well, thank you, Greg Diegas, for being in here today, for schooling us a little bit, and we will have you back because there's more to talk about. Crystalline, thank you as always. Interns, some good work, some good research work. Just thank you for doing that for me. Elevated Viewing Gallery, thank you. Always live audience is always nice. Okay, Coastside, stay warm, stay dry.
Don't start fires.
Don't start any fires. And we will be back next week on Coastal Windage, the talk of the coast.